Good morning, everyone. We're back to our old arrangement. Maybe it's a bit more comfortable. Today is March 29th. Angalakshmi has just reminded me that this is the day of the anniversary of the first meeting of Sri Aurobindo and the Mother. So it's nice that we are reading about the first meeting of Savitri and Satyavan. Before we start, Audrey has an invitation for you.
Yes, my invitation is to if you can, come and see my show at Citadine. It's over on the 13th. And the hours, I know, are not easy for us. But they're Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday from 9:30 to 12, and all the other afternoons from 2:30 to 5:30.
Alternate days, mornings and afternoons?
No.
Same.
And if anybody would like to help me sit the gallery, that would be wonderful.
And these are your latest paintings?
Yes, and I think you'll find them a surprise.
Monday, Wednesday, and Friday.
Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday.
Monday, Wednesday, and Saturday. Yes.
And then all afternoons.
So we're reading in Book 5, the Book of Love, Canto 3. Satyavan and Savitri, and we stopped about a third of a way down of page 405, line 186, if you've got the line numbers. We'll start reading from the line, "The brilliant long bills in their vivid dress." 186. Sorry, yes, 187. Yeah. So Satyavan has been introducing himself to Savitri at her request. She says, "Tell me more about yourself." So he has been telling her about his relationship with nature, how even before in his youth and childhood, when he was still living in the palace, he very much loved to see the forms of nature, the horses and the deer and the birds and so on. And he used to paint them and model them, sculpture them. So we are continuing with that.
Oh, everyone, please make sure your cell phones are off.
Yeah. There are three chairs here. Yeah. Page 405, starting reading from line 187. You would begin, Margaret?
The brilliant long bills in their vivid dress, the peacock scattering on the breeze his mules, painted my memory like a fresco wall. I cast my vision out of wood and stone. I caught the echoes of a word supreme and needed the rhythm beat of infinity and listened to music for the eternal voice. I felt a covered touch. I heard a call, but could not clasp the body of my God or hold between my hands the world's mother's feet. Immense, I met strange portions of a shell that sought for fragments and in fragments lived. Each lived in himself and for himself alone, and with the rest joined only fleeting time. Each patterned over his surface, joy and grief, nor saw the eternal in his secret house.
Thank you. Anybody would like to ask anything about these lines?
Struck by these changeless stars, because last time I think we were talking about how the stars move. So this is interesting.
Yes, yes.
Comments about that line? Because it's a capital S. And the word strange mentions, it's a very interesting line.
So first he's telling us about his love for nature and the way that he tried to express that the feelings that he gained from nature in art. Earlier we read that he painted them. Here he says sculptured them, and he also metered them. He wrote poetry, and he heard music. He says through music he was listening for the eternal voice. So it's not only that he's appreciating all the forms of nature, it's that he's looking beyond them for the presence which is supporting them all. No? I think long bills are, I think they might be the Indian hornbills.
Yeah.
They have this long beak with which is very brilliant colors. No? Because he's speaking there particularly about the colors, the vivid dress, the bright colors. No? And he says all these things are painted in his memory like a frescoed wall, a wall that has paintings on it. But he says, I couldn't really clasp, I couldn't get hold of this God that I'm worshipping. I wasn't able, he says, the world mother, he's worshipping her, he feels her child, but he can't touch her and clasp her feet. She doesn't have a concrete reality for him. And when he looks around at human beings, Mother also has mentioned that it's more difficult to contact the divine directly in human beings than in the forms of nature. No? So in men, in people, what I felt that I met was portions, parts of a self, a great self of everything. But these portions seem strange to me. No? And these strange portions are looking for other portions, parts and fragments. They live in fragments. Each human being is living in himself and for himself alone, and whatever connections he has with other people, they are only fleeting ties. They don't last long. Each of us, or each human being, is passioning over, feeling strongly his own joy and grief, our surface joy and grief, not even the depths of ourselves, no? And we don't perceive, we are not aware of that eternal self who is dwelling in us. Each of us is the secret house of that divine presence, but we are rarely aware of that.
He says he couldn't clasp the World Mother's feet, but he's aware that she exists.
Yes. No, he's been saying that all along, that he felt great nature as his mother. No?
One line here reminds me of what the world largely is, in fact, still. Each lived in himself and for himself alone.
Yep, that's how it is, no? Yeah. And even if we're aware that that's not the ideal state, we have difficulty in changing it, no? We are here to experience and live and express and develop human unity, but we're still all living each for ourselves. No? This is a problem for him, and he's going to say that he thinks that the coming of Savitri is going to solve this problem for him. Here we can read on and... Jocelyn, read.
I could urge to be used in changeless power, God, what fire burning in ignorant mind, and so upon almighty this call, the great prophecy of eternal sun. I suffer for our sages in their time. Therefore, awakening streams of diamond light against the presence of the one in heaven. But still, they are light of life, transcendent power, and matter still safe and pure soul. The spirit was safe, the body lost and moved still dead and ancient ignorance. The unconscious was space, the void itself. But thou hast come, and all the story changed. I shall see the world mother in thy golden imperial wisdom in thy sacred voice. The child of the void shall be reborn in her. My mother shall evade the unconscious plant. My body, like my spirit, shall be free. I shall escape from death and ignorance.
Thank you. It, meaning the body, it shall escape. It the body, it shall escape from death and ignorance. Aurobindo shows us that Satyavan is not only a noble prince, even though he's living in the forest, and he's not only an artist who sees with an artist's eye and tries to express his seeings. He's also really an exceptional person, because he has he's seen these glimpses. You know? He's had intuitions and perceptions. He's absorbed nature, conversed with her, learned her lessons, observed the stars. It's true what Petty said, the stars seem to us to be moving, but in their movements they don't change. No? There are the moving stars, the planets, and the unmoving stars, which return always to the same places.
The movement of the earth that makes this look like
that. Yes, yeah, so they're not
so
really.
They're not moving.
They're not. Yes.
North Star.
Mm. Yes.
Mm. No, I think none of them move.
They're not on. Of course, they do change. Everything in this universe changes. But to our perception here on Earth, they seem changeless. And the stars as such are symbols of the many truths, and they are suns in their own right, no? So he describes them as God's watchfires burning in the ignorant night. If the night is the symbol of our darkness, our ignorance, but it's lit up by these many stars, no? And seeing that, conversing with nature, he's had an intuition on her. He saw on her mighty visage fall a ray of light that prophesies, that speaks of the eternal sun, the undying sun. And he sat in meditation with the forest sages, and he's received these awakening streams of diamond light and sensed the presence of the One Self in all. But he still felt something missing. What he's missing is the transcendent power which can awaken matter or fill matter itself with the divine presence. He sees the possibility of the spirit being saved, but the body is still living with death and ignorance. This is what Sri Aurobindo told us at the very beginning in the author's note, that Satyavan represents the soul which carries the truth of being within itself, but here in the earth, in the material universe, it's in the grip of death and ignorance. So he's feeling that, no? He feels that the base foundation of the body is the inconscient, and that it's going to be dissolved back into the emptiness. But he's also got this remarkable intuition, seeing Savitri, that now all that is going to change. He says, I shall feel the world, Mother, in thy golden limbs, and hear her wisdom in thy sacred voice. In the Indian tradition, the wife is supposed to take her husband as her deity and worship on him and obey him and see the divine in him. And here it's the other way round. Satyavan is feeling the world mother in Savitri. He will worship her, and through her he will be liberated into a new life. So since today is 29th of March, I'm reminded of a talk which Nirodh Baran gave many, many years ago in the Matrimandir workers' camp. Speakers from the ashram used to come and share with us on Sunday afternoons at that time. And I remember on one occasion being very, very moved to hear from him about how he perceived the relationship between the mother and Sri Aurobindo. And he said it was as if each of them surrendered to the other, that Sri Aurobindo would do whatever mother told him to do, and she considered him the Lord. She would do whatever. She followed him and worshipped him. So it was a relationship of mutual worship and surrender. So the relationship between Savitri and Satyavan perhaps mirrors something of that. So, and so he feels that the body, the child of the void, will be reborn in God. He says, my matter is going to escape from this trance of the inconscient, and my body will be free just like my spirit, and I shall escape from death and ignorance. So right at the beginning of their relationship, this is what Savitri means to Satyavan. This is his expression of their relationship.
And also touched that in the short passage is the essence of the verb they did.
Yes, it's all foreseen here at this point when they're first meeting.
I said that in this short passage it's the essence of the work of Mother and Sri Aurobindo in it. That is concentrated.
Yeah, that's one of the major themes of the poem. No? Embodied in these two people.
This meeting of spirit and matter, this is what I wrote a poem yesterday. I had this vision that Mother and Sri Aurobindo are meeting again today here in Aurobindo. Last year we had 100th anniversary of their meeting at the guest house in Pune. But I felt that as spirit and matter, they're meeting here in Aurobindo today. I came with a group of ashramites to take a tour of the gardens and the petals. And so this ray prophetic, I'm thinking, is the ray of the Matrimandir. And this, we have another 18 years maybe until the gardens are finished. But the idea is that the full manifestation of spirit and matter is the aim, I think, of these gardens. No?
If it happens in 18 years, it'll be been miraculous.
And she'll escape from death and ignorance. She said there will be a youth that never ages.
Yes. Yeah.
That will be, brother.
Yes. Let us be confident that it will be. Yes. So who's next to read? Gentleman at the back, do you like to read?
And Savitri, musing still, replied to him, "Speak more to me, speak more, O Satyavan. Speak of thyself and all thou art within. I would know thee as if we had ever lived together in the chamber of our souls. Speak till the light shall come into my heart, and my moved mortal mind shall understand what all the deathless being in me feels. It knows that thou art he my spirit has sought amidst earth's thronging visages and forms, across the golden spaces of my life."
Thank you. I think this is clear, no? Anybody got anything they want to ask?
Can you unpack deathless beings?
The deathless being is, of course, the soul, the divine part in us. And that has immediately recognized that Satyavan is the one she's been searching for. It feels it, but she wants her mind also to understand that it's an also an important part of the being. No? And that will happen if there's a light in the heart, not more the surface heart, the heart of feeling. No? So the deathless being already feels that he is the one. But she'd like to listen to him a bit more. So she says, "Please go on speaking to me until even my mind, my heart become clear about what it is."
What is my moved mortal mind shall understand? Moved in the sense touched.
Yes, yeah, yes.
It's already touched.
The soul is touched. But the mind perhaps still doesn't quite believe it. So she would like him to go on speaking more till she gets more convinced, even this surface mind, which is so stupid and takes time to understand things.
And also you said the deathless being and the soul. And it says all the deathless beings.
Yes, her soul is completely convinced. No?
Yeah.
Actually, I was wondering, because I couldn't get the idea of light moving, coming into the heart that should make the mind clear. And I think that I now understand that when you emotionally are touched, in your higher vital especially, then you go. And then your mind is no doubt.
Yes, yeah.
It's
the way that our being is made up, no? And if for really important things, perhaps the soul is touched first, and the outer parts might not even notice. But then, if the heart responds, then that's convincing to the whole being.
Yes. The steps you describe are going to work. Some we can
correct. Yeah.
I like these golden spaces of my life. I think it means that she was in touch with truth all along.
Mother all
said,
along,
Sri said Mother was in touch with the truth from her childhood.
Yes, and she's always been in this state of bliss, no? Happiness. But still the spirit was seeking something. Especially from that moment when her father told her, look, somewhere on earth, there's somebody who's waiting for you. And this was like the mantra that changed everything for her. Otherwise, she was content with her life. No? But then, oh, that wakes something up in her. And she spent a whole year wandering and searching. And now she's met him. And this is how she puts it, no? It knows, my deathless being knows that you are the one my spirit has been seeking amid all these other faces and forms of the earth as I pass through these golden spaces of my life. And maybe it's not only on the quest, but even before. Sometimes we can get a feeling like that, no? That suddenly, since I was born, I've had this feeling. I was looking for this.
You said she'd been searching for a year. I'm not aware of that. I mean, we know that he lived a year from the time he met her. No, but she also searched. Does it say that? That she searched for a year before she met him?
I think so.
Well,
I can't prove it right now, but she set off in the summer. She set off in the high summer, and it's the high summer when she meets him. So it's the whole cycle of the seasons again.
Oh, right, I see. Yeah, she was born in the spring.
That's how I know. Yes, she was born in the spring. Yes, but it was summertime when she left. Or perhaps that's not quite right. Anyway, several months have passed.
Now we'll be on the watch to find out.
But when that level, that speed told the parents that a year from
now.
She will meet somebody and he will
He will die.
He will die, but they did not meet. She did not meet him yet, so it is.
No. That was afterwards. That's afterwards. Now we're in book 5. We haven't yet come to book 6, where she returns to her father's palace. And at that time, he says, The Asoka was blooming when she went out, and now it's blooming again that she's come back. So that, that also gives the feeling of a whole year. But then Narad gives the prophecy that Satyavan is worthy in every way to be the mate of Savitri. But very unfortunately, exactly 12 months from this day, he's destined to die.
So in the world, she had met him
before that,
and then went back to the
parents.
The prophecy was not given when she first went out looking for him.
No, of course not.
This day returning, Satyavan must die. I remember that line.
Yeah, that's in book 6.
Okay, I'll check it out.
No, at this point, nobody has any idea that there's any shadow on this beautiful meeting. No.
Beautiful meeting.
Mm, yes. So who will read?
But in the first canto, it's foretold.
Yes, the whole... Well, the legend is known anyway. Everybody knows it. So he does. He's not. He doesn't do it like a detective story. But you're waiting to the end to find out what happens. No. We know. So he tells us right at the very beginning what is Savitri's mission and that she will be successful in it. Would you like to read? Yeah.
And Satyavan, like a replying card, the insistent calling of a fool, answered her questioning and let stream to her his heart in many colored veins of speech. O golden princess, perfect Savitri, more I would tell than feeling words can speak, of all that thou hast meant to me, unknown, all that the lightning flash of love reveals. In one great hour of the unveiling gods. Even a brief nearness has reshaped my life. For now I know that all I lived and was moved towards this moment of my heart's rebirth. I look back on the meaning of myself, a soul made ready on earth's soil for thee.
Thank you. Perhaps many of us might have experienced this moment of the heart's rebirth when we look back, we see the whole course of our life and realize, oh, it was for this, I'm here for this. This is what it was all about. So, shall we read on, Helmut?
Once were my days like days of other men. To think and act was all, to enjoy and breathe. This was the width and height of mortal life. Yet there came glimpses of a deeper soul that lives behind life and makes her act. The truth was felt, it streamed, it shaped from mine. A greatness working towards a hidden end. And vaguely through the forms of earth there looked something that life is not and yet must be. I groped for the mystery with a long-term thought. Its glimmerings lighted with the abstract world. A half-visible ground and traveling yard by yard, it mapped the system of self and thought. I could not give the truth its form and thought. I turned to seize its form in visible things, hoping to fix its rule by mortal mind, impose the narrow structure of world law upon the freedom of being. A hard, firm skeleton of outward truth. a mental scheme of a mechanic power.
Thank you. Satyavan speaking about himself and the stages of his development, but we can take these lines and those that are about to come. It's almost like he's speaking on behalf of humanity. No? We start out from this life, thinking and acting is everything to enjoy and breathe. That's life. There's nothing more to it. No? But then, at a certain stage, there come glimpses of a mystery, something behind life, you know, a greatness. And then what we use to try and grasp that mystery is the power of thought. Typically, we are mental beings and we want to understand things. But the thought, it only glimmers, it only gives a faint light, and it lights things up with words, abstract words, and it shows us something, it gives us some kind of satisfaction, and we may develop for ourselves a kind of system of what we think is the truth, but we can't live it. It's too abstract. No? And then perhaps in humanity there's been the turn to explore nature, the visible things, and find out what is the way that they work, which is very, very fascinating, no? All the interrelationships. No? And we try to fix that rule with our mortal mind. But all that the mind can do is to impose a structure, no, on the freedom of the infinite. It is very convinced of itself, and it creates this hard, firm skeleton of outward truth and this mental scheme about a mechanic power. But if we are honest, that also is not convincing. It only makes things more mysterious, really. That's what he speaks of next. Patricia, would you read?
Can I
yes.
Something about line 251.
Yes.
You know, when we're using life with a capital.
Yes. Life and calls her she. No, he speaks of life, the life goddess or the life being as female, no? And we earlier we have read about her and these cantos on the glory and the fall of life. So we can think about this presence which makes everything live, as if this is a power, not just a force, but a power, a being. No? And so he said he got glimpses of something deeper, a self, no? That lives behind life and uses life, uses all these happenings as the scene for its drama. A sense that there's a deeper truth. We don't know what it is, it's a mystery, but there's something there that needs to be understood and grasped. Is it all right? Does that satisfy you?
No, I don't understand exactly why he's using the word life with a capital.
Well, it's the life principle, as we might speak of earth, meaning the material principle, and reason, also we might put it with a capital R, it's the principle of logical thought. Yeah.
This light showed more the darkness has come. It made the original secrecy more occult. It could not analyze its cosmic veil or glimpse the wonder worker's hidden hand and trace the pattern of his magic plans. I plunged into an inner seeing mind and knew the secret laws and sorceries that make of matter mind's bewildered slave. The mystery was not solved but deepened more. I strove to find its hint through beauty and art. The form cannot unveil the indwelling power. Only it throws its symbols at our hearts. It evoked a mood of self, invoked a sign of all the brooding glory hidden in sense. I lived in the ray, but faced not to the sun.
Thank you. So when the structures of surface mind, the use of the reason, all this becomes unsatisfying, we have the possibility to go deep within and come in contact with our inner mind, the mind behind mind, this inner seeing mind. And he has done that. And there he's understood, he's seen these secret laws and this sorceries, this magic, these occult truths that make matter the slave of mind. These days we don't believe in this very much, but that's foolish of us. But even this, knowing these occult truths, he says that only deepened the mystery. It didn't give real explanations, made it more deep. And another way that human beings have tried to come in contact with this underlying reality of things is through art. They're trying to grasp the principles of beauty, you know, and expression. But he found that form cannot reveal that indwelling power. It throws its symbols at our hearts and something touches us and we have a sense of deep significance in certain expressions of beauty and of art. And it does communicate something. It evoked a mood of self, invoked a sign, called for a sign of all the brooding glory hidden in sense. The senses. How come we can see and perceive and enjoy all these things which the senses reveal to us? It's also a mystery. So he had the feeling that, oh, I'm living in a ray of light. There's some illumination there, but I'm not turned towards the sun. I can't see the source, and I can't see the full light. Tekeste, are you going to read? Oh, okay. Would you like to read?
I looked upon the world and missed the self. And when I found the self, I lost the world. My other self I lost on the body of God, the link of the finite with the infinite, the bridge between the appearance and the truth. The mystic aim for which the world was made, the human sense of immortality. But now the gold link comes to me with thy feet, and his gold sun has shone on me from thy face. For now another realm draws near with thee, and now diviner voices fill my ear. A strange new world swims to me in thy gaze, approaching like a star from a known heaven. A cry of spheres comes with thee and a song of flaming gods. I draw a wealthier breath and in a purer march of moments meet.
Thank you. So this has been the problem of spirituality. You look upon the world and you think, where is the self that is the real meaning and support of all this? But in order to find that self, it seems we have to turn away from the appearances of the world and go deep inside, and there we may have deep intimations, experiences, maybe even the experience of the one self. But we've lost touch with the world through that. This has been the problem through the centuries, no? The link, what is the link between all these finite lives and experiences and movements and the infinite, without which they couldn't exist? But what's the link? What is the bridge between the appearance and the truth? And what is that mystic sun? What is the reason for which the world was made? And why have we got this sense of immortality? Where has it come from? So the link is the mother. She is the golden bridge. And that's how he feels. He says, now the gold link comes to me with thy feet, and his gold sun has shone on me from thy face. I see that there is a connection between the supreme reality, the infinite, the eternal, the transcendent, and all this here. And of course, this is not in a metaphysical sense. This is in an experience he has. He feels it. He feels another realm drawing near, and diviner voices, new possibilities. And that makes him feel completely different. I draw a wealthier breath, much deeper and richer. And the movement of time is fierier, it's full of intensity and energy, and the mind even is transfigured. So this is a very important aspect of Sri Aurobindo's teaching, the vision he would like to share with us.
So in some sense it seems that the purpose maybe of the avatar coming, that he embodies the divine, and then we can touch it, you know, and come into contact with that presence. But from there it has to extend to all of life, all of matter.
Yes, each coming of the avatars brings us nearer to the eventual fulfillment of the transfiguration of everything, when the whole universe becomes the avatar. And he has the intuition that Savitri brings this nearer. And for him it becomes really immediate and real.
Shraddha, I was reading something yesterday on the internet. And I was reading something on the internet yesterday, and it sounds very, very crazy right now, but this particular author feels that as we are evolving, there are more than one soul living within one body. Because like how we see Savitri and Satyavan became one, greater and greater number of souls are becoming one and taking one body. And this is like, in fact, I feel sometimes that all of us who are connected, whether or not.
Yes, there are collective souls, collective. That is sure. But then the body is not a single human body. In fact, Mother has spoken about this. No, she said that as evolution proceeds, yes, one avatar is not going to be enough. And even this time we saw the dual avatar has come. So she suggests that in future the next avatar might be a group of people, because it will need more than one body to be able to express itself in. So you could think maybe that the ashram and ideally Auroville would be steps in that direction. But the important thing is that this shouldn't be a group of people forming a group body which is separated from the entire body of humanity. It has to be linked in every way. So that makes the realization and the transformation more difficult, because the whole collectivity has to be in a way carried along with it. Well, but still, every individual progress contributes to that general forward movement. So, Satyavan, the soul of humanity, the soul of the individual, and Savitri, the incarnation of the Supreme Divine Mother. They come together to do a dual work on behalf of the whole of humanity, for earth and men.
Two souls in a single body is not possible. When a mother is conceived, you think that the soul is living within the mother's body. It is my question. I thought that when the child comes out of the mother's body, the soul enters.
No, I believe everything's possible. Mother has said everything is possible. And in the case, she says the soul may enter at conception, or maybe it's been even there preparing the mother before conception, and then it's preparing the body and so on. And sometimes it can sometimes come, yes, as Tuan says, years later.
Many
yes.
Years later.
So it's possible to have two forces.
In that sense of a mother with a soul and of the child within her, yes.
He heard it also in Savitri that at times he said that all the gods are in her, and the mother also said when the I don't know where, but when the psychic is developed, that we are connected with everything inside. It is so. I don't know. How
yeah, we have to soul. Define what we mean by soul.
Yes,
no,
yes.
Usually what you were speaking about, I think, is that individual psychic personality, mm-hmm. and. I won't say it's not possible. Every mother said everything is possible, and everything that's possible happens. So, but I don't quite see what would be the point of having two highly developed psychic personalities in one physical body, because the physical body in any case presents such limitations to the self-expression of the soul. Why would it make it more difficult, you know, by having two. Yeah. But still, let us say, everything is possible.
But I find yesterday I believe some in also Father Agenda, today of the mother, and mother said about Bharatini.
Yes.
The master of Tibetan. And she said a long time ago, my soul living together in one body.
The two souls, Bharati's soul and her soul.
No. Yeah. Mm. But one body.
Wow.
The same body.
Okay.
Lost the me and.
Yes, so there you are.
He's a very, very interesting. Yeah.
No. But she was a French lady. Mother gave her this name. She was a great scholar of Buddhism, Pali, and Sanskrit.
Yeah.
And she has translated the Dhammapada into French. And that was the text that the mother used with the students in the school for the teaching of French. She taught them with
what was the name of this woman?
Bharati Di. Di means elder sister, Bharati. Mother gave her this name. I don't know what her French name was.
I read it yesterday only.
Yes?
Her French name.
Yeah, il dit le même French, but I don't remember. Yolande quelque chose.
Shall we try to finish the section? Yes. Who's next to read? Audrey?
My mind transfigures to a restless seer. Informed traveling from the ways of bliss has changed my heart and changed the earth around. All with that coming fills air, soil, and stream. Wear bridal raiment to be fit for thee, and sunlight grows a shadow of thy hue because of change within me by thy will. Come nearer to me from thy car of light on this green sward, disdaining not our soil, for there are secret spaces made for thee, whose caves of emerald long to screen thy form. Wilt thou not make this mortal bliss thy sphere?
Thank you. Oh, this is a beautiful declaration of love and the effect that love has. No? Everything changes. And then again he invites her, please come down to us.
The secret why the earth is born is given through love.
Yes.
It inflames his heart, it goes up to the mind, and makes him understand, basically.
Yes. Yeah.
That is what I felt.
Yes. No, I'm sure it's like that. So that's a kind of thread running through the whole poem, that the real transforming power is love. Yes. But then we have to be careful what we mean by the word. And we have to be fit. Yes, we were told, we are shown that Savitri in her nature is born fit to house spiritual love, divine love. And that can have a physical expression. This is a poem about conjugal love, about the love between a husband and a wife. No? But it needs to be purified by the higher senses also. You wanted to say something?
When Mother meets Aurobindo first time and she goes to Japan again, He stayed 6 years. Why he stayed 6 years? Is some admission or purification or?
I can't help speculating about it, but I don't really want to share my speculations.
Okay. No, but I.
She left again in 1915, and the outer reason for that was that she was with Paul Richard, and he was summoned back to France to take part in the war effort. And somewhere she said, Shrelbindo didn't keep me, so I had to go. So she stayed with Richard, and he was quite clever at doing that kind of thing. He got himself posted to Japan. And that seems to have been a very valuable time for the mother. And there's some exchange of letters between her and Shrelbindo. Yes. Obviously, they did keep in touch through all that time. And then there seems to have come some kind of crisis in her life in late 1919, which we can maybe get a hint of from the prayers and meditations. And they came back. They both came back in April. April 24th, 1920. And then something happened with Risha, and he left, and she stayed with Shrelbindo. So these are the outward things that we can say. That's all.
You also said you waiting conversion of Paul Risha, but he's not converted.
Yes. But the funny thing is that he seems to have got converted after he left. It seems for the rest of his life he went on speaking and writing about Shrelbindo as the one who has the true vision of the future. So he never turned hostile or anything like that. And he met Dilip Kumar Roy in the 1960s sometime and sent a message of greeting to the mother at that time. So all there are traces of all this in the. So whatever it was in him that she was trying to convert or had to, or yes, I don't know.
Is my knowledge limited knowledge?
Yes.
Is there anything written, perhaps of course by the mother, of what she experienced and learned in Japan?
Yes.
In agenda, he expressed lots of experience in Japan.
The most informal things are in the agenda, but she has also, even at that time, she wrote an article and so on. There's. France has collected a little, beautiful little collection about the mother in Japan. And her close friends, she had close friends, two families there. And one of those ladies came and visited her in the ashram. So there are beautiful photographs of them together in the, 50s or early 60s. And she's spoken about it to the children, about what she saw in Japan there, this beauty, unbelievable beauty. And she said, I had seen it in my vision, and I thought they were just visions. No? But there in Japan I saw it realized physically. So that was, I think, the positive side of her stay in Japan.
I go to cottage restaurant, upstairs, quite a lot of photos of mother in Japan.
Oh.
Which, where is it now?
Cottage
restaurant.
Restaurant, you know, cottage industry.
Pondicherry.
Pondicherry, along the canal. You know the ashram petrol pump?
Yeah.
Just next door.
Oh.
You go up.
It's the ashram sweet shop and restaurant, yes. And they've got a beautiful new building designed by Popo and Mona.
Mona.
Yes.
there a collection of the letters between Sri Aurobindo and Mother?
There must be. I mean, the letters Sri Aurobindo wrote to her are included in his letters on yoga. But I have seen them separately somewhere, but I can't exactly now.
Somebody's been taking care of collecting.
Well, I participated in making a collection called Glimpses of the Mother's Life, which was published in the 70s. Now it's out of print. And perhaps two of those letters are in there. But I don't have that book with me anymore. Now it's out of print. I think they have it in the library. Yes. It's, there are two volumes, and this would be in the first volume.
It's called
Glimpses of the Mother's Life. It's a compilation, whatever she has said. And the ashram archives also have brought out a little book, The Mother on Herself. But I don't think those letters are in there.
Then there's something called, and I only heard it, but I don't know about it, Mother's Law, supposedly.
This is a Satprem book. It's somehow a compilation from the agenda with his annotations. So let's just read this last bit, beautiful bit. Tuan, you can read it.
Descend, O happiness, with thy moon-gold feet, and rich heart flowers upon whose sleep we lie. O my bright, beauteous princess Savitri, by my delight and thy own joy compelled, enter my life, thy shamba and thy shrine. In the great quietness where spirits meet, led by my husband, let by my hushed desire into my woods, let the dim rustling arches over thee lean, one with the breath of things eternal life.
Live.
Thy heart beats near to mine, till there shall leap and chant from the fragrance of the flowers a moment which all murmurs shall recall and every bird remember in its pride.
Beautiful.
Yeah. Such passion.
We can hear passages 4, 5, 6, and 7.
Shobhanan, on page 4 or 6, there are two lines in which it seems to me that it is possible. This is line 235 and 236. Everything I read that's written by the two of them is like this.
The replying harp.
And beautiful use. An expression possible maybe that we can learn to communicate in this way to transcend thought a little bit?
Yes. At least we can see it in their words.
Yeah.
That the way that they complement each other in the meaning, but also in the manner of expression. But about them, I think, you know, about Sri Aurobindo, many of the things that he says are not so accessible to everybody.
Yeah.
But then when we read Mother's words, she puts everything so simply. And of course, all those questions and answers from 1950 to 1958, all these volumes, she was speaking to children, to young people. You know? And there she's given the answer to so much that we need to know as the basis of a higher life. And then in her writings. But it's all perfectly congruent. They complement each other.
To me, speak more, O Satyava. Speak of thyself and all thou art within. speak, till light shall come into my heart, and my moved mortal mind shall understand what all the deathless being in me feels. It knows that thou art he my spirit has sought amidst earth's thronging visages and forms. Across the golden spaces of my life. And Satyavan, like a replying harp to the insisting calling of a flute, answered her questioning and let strain to her his heart in many colored waves of speech. Oh, golden princess, perfect Savitri, will thou not make this mortal bliss thy sphere? Descend, O happiness, with thy moon gold feet, enrich earth's floors upon whose sleep we lie. O Satyavan, I have heard thee, and I know that thou, and only thou, art he. Then down she came from her high carven car, descending with a soft and faltering haste, her gleaming feet upon the green gold sward, scattered a memory of wandering beings, and lightly pressed the unspoken desire of earth, cherished in her too brief passing by the soil.
Thanks to Shrapendra.
Thank you. I know, it's very, I mean, it's also nice.
Sure.
Yes, where is it from? From
Hello. Do you have one of the books that you showed us last night? Do you have the comparison of the chakra pictures? Do you remember that? From what we were reading in the...
So you tell me the process, how you study. Actually, I don't just see it now. This cupboard here, it's now on the bottom shelf.
So what was in here?
No, you have to stop it.